Brother, I'm going on a wild hog holding. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick her on this choke cord. But it's no host bar, middle finger like a stone cold.
What is good, ladies and gentlemen? We are back with another episode of the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast. I'm Weed Too Deep. That's DJ Wavy D. As always, click that QR code in the bottom right of the screen if you're watching. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, the link is in the description. Go get you some WWE merchandise. You know, we have new titles out that are selling. You know, if you got $400 to put on titles, go use the link. You know, some new shirts, all your merch can go there. Link in the description, as well as the link to our Discord. If you are a listener of this podcast and you aren't in the Discord, that's where the conversation happens. Me and Wavy D, Junkyard James,
Bumass Corbin,
all of them. We all sit in that Discord, and you know, we need some WWE support because James been recruiting these AEW fans.
Yes.
So you know it's that's a fun time in there. And then of course junkyardmediagroup.com. You can check out that website as well. That's where all of the podcasts can be found there as well. Let's get down to business. As you can see with the episode, we're going to talk about. I have a theory. I want to ask DJ Wavy D my theory. Okay. That's towards the end of the show, but we're going to start instead of let's get cooking this week. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a blind ranking, and I'll be honest. I ripped this off of another podcast, but I'm gonna add to it. They just do the main roster. Champions. I'm going to add AEW's champions, but I'm also going to add NXT's champions to this. So it's going to be a blind ranking. We all know how those work. We're going to do one through five. We'll spin the wheel. You have to place that without knowing who the ones behind it are. So there's some strategy to it. Got the wheel right here. So
this is AEW, WWE, NXT.
Correct.
All right. Shout out to my boy Milwaukee Mike. I'm gonna try not to fall into your trap.
Yeah, Milwaukee Mike be doing. He always every single week. He starts good, but then something always goes wrong. So there's some strategy here. All right. So this first one we're ranking is going to be everyone's favorite tag team, the Young Bucks.
Okay.
Your AEW World Tag Team Champions. I'll go first here. I'm going to be safe. I'm going to put them at three. Okay. To be safe. I don't think they're not the best on the list, and so I feel like there's two that we'll get that are better, so I'll put the Young Bucks at three.
I'll put them at four because from my perspective, they're on the lower half of the AEW championship list.
Okay.
And then they're also like way below a lot of WWE champions.
That's fair.
So that's why I'm putting them a little low.
All right. So the next one. Ooh, this one's tough. Damian Priest. I'll let you go first on this one.
Well, actually, He's lucky now. There was a lot of title changes. A lot of titles changed hands. So I if you asked me this like maybe 2 weeks ago or a week ago before Mania, if Damian was
right
before Mania, I probably would put him at like five or something.
Right.
But so I put Young Bucks at four. I'm putting Damian at two.
Damian. All right.
Put Damian at two.
See, now I'm starting to be like, why did I put the Young Bucks at three? Because I'm going to put him at two. I don't think he's the best on the list. And so we'll put Damian at two as well. Our next one will be, oh, good Lord. Okay, good. Roxanne Perez, our NXT Women's Champion. This one's kind of easy for me, but I'm going to put her at five.
Let's see. So I got Damian at two, Bucks at four. Okay, this is tough a little bit. She has really good in-ring work.
Mm-hmm.
Her character as a heel isn't quite there for me yet.
Right.
I'll put Roxanne at five. I got you there. Yeah, I'll put her at five.
All right. So you got one
over half of champions.
Right. So you got one and three left. I got one and four left. Let's see if we can get someone good here. And we are going to get Adam Copeland, your TNT champion. I don't think he's won, so I'm going to have to put him at four. And I really hope we get someone good.
This is good for me. Yeah, I'll put Adam Copeland at three because, yeah, he's above the Young Bucks as far as AEW champion worthy wrestlers.
Right.
And yeah, Roxanne. Yeah, she's the women's champion of the, in my eyes, developmental brand until I see otherwise. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so I'll put her there.
All righty. So, no matter what happens, both of us will have this at number one. And that
I'm trying to predict it. I think the last person is going to be Becky Lynch, the new women's champion.
You were close. Literally was just passed over Becky. It is our Smack. Well, I guess it's not no longer the SmackDown tag team. I forgot the World Tag Team or WWE Tag Team. It's A Town Down Under, Theory and Waller.
Hey, I'll take it.
I mean, from the five that we got, I think they are the best team.
Yeah,
best champion. So it's not a bad list.
The only thing I would have done differently was put Damian at one and A Town at two.
Yeah, that would probably been the only change. All righty, so that's fun there. We'll bring Let's Get Cooking. I honestly ran out of ideas. He brought me a good idea. I think it was yesterday, and we'll do that next week. I don't remember it off the top of my head, the one you shared with me, but we'll do that next week. Mm-hmm. And we'll continue doing these rankings and seeing what other wrestlers we can get up here in our rankings. I'm a share a post in the Discord where you guys are going to vote on who did it the best and see what the Discord thinks about it.
All right.
But now let's get down to business. And that is the first thing I want to talk about is slowly over the last like 5 days since last Friday. WWE's been like trickling some releases. Mm-hmm. So we've had Gender, Xia Li, the rest of Indusheer, Zion Quinn, which honestly, the fact that he was even still there. Cameron Grimes was just released today. There's someone
else. Von
Wagner. I think the biggest one of these, though, is Gender. And I know I talked about it at the time, and some others mentioned it. But it almost feels like this Rock promo that he had in January sort of like spelled the end of his run. What's your thoughts on these releases? And the responses from the wrestlers, you know, Sangha and Veer went off and did what everybody does and get bitter and blame WWE and all of that. And, you know, Cameron Grimes got super emotional. Then yes, you had the ones like Xia Li, who said, you know, the big thank you went out without burning bridges. So what's your thoughts on all these releases?
I gotta say, I think I agree with all of them. I wish probably Cameron Grimes would probably be the person I would keep. I would put either, you know, put him back down to NXT or kept him as a developmental guy. I mean, put over guy, you know, like a almost right. like a jobber. Because, like, you know, you need level, you know, you need all levels of talent on your roster. Not everybody can be pushed. You know what I'm saying? You need right. you need jobber guys. Like, shout out to my boys Funaki and Jimmy Wang Yang back in the day.
Right.
Von Wagner, he was rumored to get a big push back when Vince was in charge just because he was a big, blonde, buff mm-hmm. dude. Apparently, he hasn't shown as much charisma. I'm not as familiar with his wrestling. I saw him a few times at NXT. But by the time I started watching it a little more consistently, he wasn't on TV really anymore. Xia Li, she just couldn't get over with the crowd. I mean, the problem with some of these talents, I think, is that they're a big part of their character is their cultural background.
Right.
And Jinder Mahal, I think he would have fared a lot better if he wasn't paired with Indusheer. Mm-hmm. You know, being like their manager or mouthpiece, whatever. I feel like if he just stayed as a wrestler, he would have been better. Or maybe you get a program with Drew McIntyre, like with their history. I feel like you could definitely use Jinder a lot better, especially under Triple H. I feel like Jinder could have had a chance because he's not a bad promo guy. Like, he gets good heat as a heel.
Right.
It's just that, you know, since his title push, or his, you know, since his title win back in 2017, he just hasn't done much to where, like, he's a believable threat when he's in matches. Yeah, to touch on the characters who, like, their culture seems like their character. At the end of the day, you know, even though wrestling is global, you got to remember, wrestling is a white man's sport. You know, I ain't gonna hold you. Like, historically, it's a white man's sport. You know, I know, like, we're starting to get a lot more diversity in wrestling over, like, the last 20 years. We're getting a lot more diversity, especially within the last 10 years. A lot more diversity. But the problem, you know, when you make your culture, you know, the main part of your character, especially in the United States, where, you know, I didn't do any research about this, but just from, like, looking around and getting a feel of things, it doesn't seem like in the United States, like, mainland, we have, like, a huge, like, you know, Indian population, you know, or Indian fan base. I know overseas you build it over in India, you know, over the Middle East and all that stuff. You build it up there. But I just don't feel like our, you know, that group of people is as big of a wrestling population in the States. And when you run your weekly television shows in the States, you look out in the crowd, you see a lot of white people, you sprinkle in some blacks and Hispanics. But, like, just for the main part, 80% of the in-house attendance is white people. So when you have a character who is Middle Eastern or Indian or Chinese, and, like, that's their character, like, that's, like, their attire, right. their music, their, you know, Xia Li's coming out, like, with, like, ninjas fans and swords or whatever, doing karate on her way to the ring.
Right.
I feel like if you get these characters –
right.
And, like, showed their personality more rather than a cultural, like, blanket, they had a better chance to connect with the fans.
I can agree with that. And I think that's partially, like, I'll apply that more to, like, Indusheer. They were just marketing to try to build the India fan base. Yeah. And obviously, either that didn't work out. There were rumors of, like, an NXT India. I don't think that that's a big thing over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm actually surprised they lasted as long as they did. Now, I agree with you. I think Jinder Mahal, I think, is the one that I feel the most upset about being cut, because I felt that they didn't give him a shot outside of what you just described of be the mouthpiece of these two big Indian guys. Mm. And I mean, for Veer, I mean, he spent a year with the Veer Mahan coming soon to Raw thing, and it busted. They went to NXT and it went okay, but they never really got over with anyone. And if you can't get over, and I'll say it this way, if you can't get over with the NXT crowd, as hardcore as that fan base is, you're never going to get over on the main roster. Mm. And so I just don't think it worked. But at the same time, like, everyone's reacting to Cameron Grimes's video, and it was emotional. You could tell he just got off the phone. What I wish these wrestlers would do when these things happen is give it a day. Let it, like Veer and Sangha just immediately reacted. Cameron Grimes immediately made a video, and it's pure emotion, and it's fine. That's what they want. They want to get the views and the clicks, and that's. But some people say things they don't mean when they're emotional, or when Cameron Grimes gets released and he releases this emotional video of him crying. To me, it doesn't connect with me the same way it does to everyone else. I mean, it sucks. No one wants to see anyone lose their job, but it's the business. It is what it is. It's a business decision at the end of the day. I mean, he's been on TV, what, twice in the last year?
Yeah.
If that. And so at the end of the day, I've been saying this with Endeavor at the helm. Any way they can save money, they're going to do it. They did it with UFC when they bought UFC. They cut that roster. And the fact that we haven't had more releases is really surprising to me. I think we'll see more. I like the way they're doing their releases, though, where they'll sprinkle them out like two a day instead of doing like 20 at one time.
It makes it more digestible.
And it feels more like a corporate firing rather than like when Vince did it. It just felt like it was so easy to look at it as, oh, the big corporation just laid off 30 people. And I think we have to stop looking at wrestling that way, because it's no different than what the NFL does at the end of spring training.
Yeah.
At the end of spring training, at the end of summer camps, the rosters go from 90 to 53, and those players got to go somewhere. Now, most of them go to practice squads. But it's hard for me to feel bad for someone like Cameron Grimes, because the dude in 90 days will show up in TNA and be just fine. I think that's where he goes. I think gender, honestly, I think he goes and thrives in TNA. I think TNA is an option for a lot of these people who aren't the sort of like super AEW style. Like, honestly, you know, Xia Li might go to AEW. I could see her there. They like the more Asian talent over there anyway. But the bigger guys, I could see like Veer and Sangha going to TNA. They like the big guys there as well. But I think a lot of people are seeing TNA as sort of a bridge back to WWE. That's why I think people like AJ Francis and Nick Nemeth and them, it was easy for them to transition there because there is that working relationship now with WWE, whereas AEW just doesn't really fit. I mean, Goldberg even came out and said he will never join AEW. The product's too corny for him, which I think that's what we've been saying for like the last 3 years. So it sucks that they get released. You don't really want to see it, but I understand it.
Question for you. So you're someone who watches NXT heavy. You're heavily invested in NXT. Now, when this year went down to NXT, were they doing similar type of matches like they did in the main roster, where they were squashing like in 2 minutes?
Or no, like, were they were putting on actual matches.
I think that's a big problem of like the main roster.
Yeah,
is like when they put these guys on TV for 3-4 straight weeks, and they're squashing jobbers or they're squashing local talent, and you can't actually see their actual moveset. It's like you're giving us a guy who can't talk. You put him in the ring for a minute or two, and then he goes backstage.
I think that's the problem with a lot of the bigger guys, because, for example, Von Wagner, he was technically drafted as undrafted. He was a free agent at the last draft. Never showed up anywhere on the main roster. He did a couple dark matches on Raw and SmackDown tapings. I know the last time they came to Charlotte, that I went, he was the dark match. But it was like a 3-minute match. You didn't really get to see much. It didn't really mean anything. And so for a lot of these big guys, you know, historically, it's always been, we're going to put them against the small dude. They'll beat the shit out of them. And the fans are supposed to applaud it. And I think the fans are just not a big fan of that type of booking anymore.
Yeah.
That worked in the 80s when everyone in wrestling was big.
Yeah.
But I think now there's a love for, as much as we shit on the flippy shit, I know a lot of casual fans who love it.
Yeah.
And
no, I love flippy shit. I hate no selling shit.
I think my problem as well is when every match does it. Mm. But like you said, when there's a Canadian destroyer, you have to sell the shit. If you just stand straight up and don't sell it, I laugh at you. Like, you got to sell it. And so, yeah. So when they send these big guys like Wagner and Indusier to the main roster, and there's no character, it's just, he's a big dude. It's similar to Omos, where there's no character, but we've seen Omos off TV, like doing videos where there's personality there.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why their formula is he's 7'2" Nigerian. Let's just have him go into battle royals where everyone teams up on him and eliminates him. That's not going to get him over. I mean, it worked for Andre the Giant, but even with Andre, he was able to wrestle.
Yeah.
Right. Even with Andre, he was allowed to do moves.
Yeah. Even the Big Show was doing drop kicks back in his younger days and jump off the top rope.
Right.
But to backtrack slightly, I think this would be a good question for you to answer. So, but back to almost like, you know, the end of Sheer and Xia Li thing. Well, you know, and there's other characters as well, but we're talking about these guys who got released. For these characters who their character is heavily influenced by their culture, that's kind of like all their character. So, you know, I don't know if the audience knows or not, but you are a white wrestling fan. How does it feel to connect to other characters who, no matter what their cultural background is, when their cultural background is so heavy influenced into their character? Is it harder for you to connect sometimes?
I wouldn't say it's harder to connect. I think to me, and this may just be me, I get the point you're coming at. I don't necessarily care. So, like, for example, Kofi Kingston, when he pretended to be Jamaican, I got it. But when it gets exposed as being a fake, then, like, for example, like I know that Jinder Mahal is not Indian. He's Canadian, born in Canada, raised in Canada. And so for me, it was harder for me to connect with him as Indian, even though that's his family heritage. He's Canadian. Mm. And so to me, it just, he was actually one of the good ones at getting the character over, though, as being Middle Eastern. As like Xia Li, the whole like anime, like cartoon, like comic book shit that her entrance would, that was just corny to me. But that's just because I've never really been into that subculture.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say because it's their culture that I can't connect to it, because there are white gimmicks that I can't connect to as well, and I think are corny. So like Fallon Henley does it well, but there's a lot of times they'll just put a southern girl in cowboy boots and give her a cowboy hat, and it's the fakest shit ever, and you can tell.
I do think with characters like Kofi and Fallon Henley, they have personality behind their character too.
Right.
So Kofi, you know, he had a little bit of creepy music, he had an accent, but other than that, like when he would do backstage or he'd be in the ring, he had personality. You know, saying he wasn't just angry wrestler number four.
Right. So I'm not against them using their culture. So a lot of people, like when Tony D'Angelo came out, and they're like, oh, they're just giving him the angry mafia Italian stereotype gimmick. And I'm all for stereotype gimmicks. I think if done correctly and tastefully, they're just like the D'Angelo family is now, it's very good entertainment. There are times when it's not done right. WWE's known for a lot of just stereotypes that are distasteful. I would even like, I don't know, I look at something like Crime Time, and that's just, you know.
Well, the funny part about them, that was actually their idea. That was JT's right. idea.
Right.
That was, Vince was low-key against it at first. He was like, I don't know, even know if I can put this on TV.
Right.
But he gave JT the chance. Shout out JTG.
Exactly.
RP Shed.
RIP. But yeah, I think what I would say is a lot of time, like even like with Obafemi's gimmick now, technically it's more of, but like you said, he has the, it is sort of centered around him being the Nigerian wrestler, but he has a lot of charisma behind it.
Yes.
And so I think that's where it lacks. Xia Li could have played Chinese, because she was like the only Chinese wrestler in the world that in WWE.
Except for Zion Quinn.
And so you could have, though I think Zion Quinn's more like Polynesian. He's closer to Roman Reigns than.
Oh, okay.
Because when he sort of came onto the scene, it was around the same time as Solo, and I suggested that they put him in the Bloodline with Solo, just to give him something to do. The thing with and now we've crossed that barrier with Tama Tonga. You don't have to be blood to be in the Bloodline. In Polynesian culture, if you're Polynesian, if you're Samoan, even if you're not blood related, you're related. And so, in the same, like, Tama Tonga is not family, but The Rock considers him family. And so that's why he's part of the gimmick. And so I think, like, same thing with, like, Bronson Reed. Could you imagine Bronson Reed in the Bloodline? He's like 25% Polynesian, but still, like, that would be pretty crazy. And so I think I would say that Roman's entire gimmick was based on his culture, but there was story behind it. There was charisma behind it. And so if Xia Li had that connection and that charisma, I think it could have worked.
She even started to get a little interesting when she was in that Becky feud for those few weeks.
Right.
Because she like was talking a little more. She was showing, was in backstage promos and backstage segments. Yeah, right. She became a little bit interesting for that feud.
Right, absolutely. All right, so we'll move on. We mentioned Nick Nemeth earlier. He was, I forgot what show he was on, but I saw that he, in short, he basically said that his WWE career, which spanned 19 years, was a toxic relationship. And so my question is, everyone knows Dolph Ziggler, Nick Nemeth, was at one point my favorite wrestler in the WWE. I was the guy that was sitting there every time he was in a match, in a championship match, complaining because he never got an opportunity. But this dude sat in the back for 10 years straight and made almost $1 million a year to show up like three times a year and sit in catering the rest of the year. He got to do comedy whenever he wanted. I don't know. To me, this just almost comes off a little bit bitter that he didn't get the opportunity. I don't know. For me, if I was paid $750,000 a year to not do anything, I would be okay with that. So what's your thoughts on his comment? So would his situation be considered toxic to you?
I mean, so, no, I'm not backstage with him. I don't know what his day-to-day, operations are with, or day-to-day interactions with management and everything. But as a fan watching Dolph Ziggler over the years, like, he's been there practically since I started watching wrestling.
Right.
You know, he's been there, 19, 20 years now? Shoot. He peaked very early in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't, from my perspective, or at least for what I could recall, he didn't quite do any character changes until the later years of like the last two or three years while he was with the company.
Mm-hmm.
When he was doing that stuff with Mustafa Ali and everything. I forgot what it was. It was centered around the IC title, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like there was a big stretch of time where Dolph Ziggler was the show off or whatever his other nicknames were. Like his music was the same. His entrance was the same. Like Dolph Ziggler, he didn't change character a lot. He peaked really early. And, you know, you're talking about a man who's a what? Two-time heavyweight champion or a one-time heavyweight champion?
One-time world champion, several-time IC US title.
Yeah.
I think him and Bobby Roode won the Raw tag titles. So, I mean, yeah. He's
yeah, I think he's a three-time tag champ and, like, mm-hmm. a five-time IC champ or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
And, you know, Money in the Bank winner, cash-in, you know, one of the biggest cash-ins. So, like, he's had highlights to his career. I do think, you know, he was unfortunate that Vince wasn't quite, you know, down with the smaller guys. And Dolph Ziggler sold sometimes too well to the point where right. he made other people look really good. And, you know, you need those wrestlers who make people look really good. And again, that's why Dolph got almost $1 million a year, where it was like, what, 750,000? Right. Or 800,000 for most years, whatever, $100 million or whatever. So Dolph did a really good job of making people go, you know, look good and go over, which is why he got paid handsomely,
right?
You know, compared to most wrestlers. And so, you know, I don't know his day-to-day operations backstage, but you would think that, you know, we heard stories about a lot of other wrestlers who talk to management, try to get a push or try to explore right. their character and try to explore other avenues. You know, maybe, you know, you hear that a wrestler is a little disgruntled backstage. And, like, you know, I don't recall really hearing too much from Dolph Ziggler. He's been, you know, a company guy for all these years. WWE even lets him, like, take off all these long breaks to go do comedy and go do his thing. So I feel like, you know, they had a good working relationship from the outside looking in. And, you know, Dolph is in TNA now doing his thing. You know, he's in championship programs and he's in big matches right now. I mean,
right.
So I don't get why he's too salty right now. I feel like, you know, maybe he might regret not taking more revenge or maybe not speaking up more. But he's had a very successful career. He's a future WWE Hall of Famer.
Right. Right. Absolutely. All right, we're going to move on. I talked about this topic a little bit on Friday. I want to get your opinion on it. And that is Drew Gulak seemingly literally being killed off TV. If you guys watch NXT, that's essentially what they're referring to. They had Tony D'Angelo come out and basically said no quarter catch crew paid them to off Drew Gulak. He's basically been killed off TV. And because of the situation with Ronda Rousey, I basically feel like this is all just a game of he said, she said, and we don't really know what happened. But Ronda, this isn't like the first time Ronda's like accused people of anything. And so, like, I don't know. What's your thoughts, your opinion on Ronda and how she's been acting here recently?
I definitely touched on this in the Discord, which me and James had a big back and forth the other day about stuff revolving around this. You know, this is one of the examples that we talked about that you know, shared similar things to the Tessa Blanchard and her going back to TNA and all the other stuff. You know, like, where's the proof? You know. And, you know, that's kind of what, you know, what James's opinion was where's the proof in this stuff? And then I was coming at it more of like, well, if you're going to say where's the proof, I'm going to say, why is it not the same for all situations? You know what I'm saying? Right. Like Drew Gulak and the Ronda Rousey situation, like you said, it's just he said, she said. There's no proof. There's no witnesses coming forward. Like, based off what Drew's story was that he say that he approached her in a group of people and was shaking hands and saying hi or whatever.
Yeah, basically he said he was just shaking hands, and when he got to Ronda, it was sort of like an accident. He grabbed her drawstring.
Yeah. And so, like, based on the Drew story, if there are, like, if, like, I don't know, maybe he didn't word it right, but from what I can recall, he said that she was in a group talking to people, and then he came up and talked to everybody or whatever. So if there's other people there, I don't get what, you know, why nobody's, you know, getting their side of the story, a third party version of the story, or like, Rhonda, if this did happen, why don't you, you know, speak out sooner or whatever. You know, I just think that she's just, you know, talking about every, again, I don't want to downplay what could have been harassment, but it's like, why not speak up sooner? Why wait until you get let go from the company, and then this is like the fourth or fifth thing that you've been complaining about? You know, say it's one thing if you aired out all this stuff all in one day, but now we're getting to the point where it's like, you aired out something last week, and then the week before that, and then the next week you're airing out something different. Right. At this point, just do like a tell-all book or something. But as far as Drew is concerned, I think that he's in the unfortunate situation to where he's a side effect of what's going on with Vince McMahon.
Right.
Again, you know, another thing that's going to have its day in court or whatever, you know, innocent until proven guilty. It looks damning for him as far as public opinion.
Right.
But, you know, he's another person who's going to have his day in court. And, you know, they'll get to the bottom of it or whatever. But I think if the Vince stuff didn't happen, and this is just, like, the only thing on WWE's plate, I think it would have got swept under the rug. But, right. You know, with the Vince stuff going on, you know.
Right.
Sorry, my cat is tweaking.
Nah, jumping on my desk. You can.
But yeah, I think Drew is just the side effect of the Vince allegations. And so WWE and TKO are trying to rid off all this stuff and keep their name out the news for more harassment stuff and more sexual workplace stuff.
Yeah, I think they're going to start taking this stuff serious. It's not going to be like a, you know, it's going to basically end up becoming, if there's allegation, you're off of TV. And so I'm fine with that. I wish we didn't live in a culture, though, where allegations could just come up with no proof. So I hate to say, you know, Ronda, where's the proof? Because it's going to be hard to be, like, in the moment to, like, record him if he did grab her the way she said he did, or she did. You know, it would be hard to prove that. But you would assume, like you were just saying, in that group of people, someone could corroborate her story.
Yeah, or even go to management and get, you know, on file.
Right. And so I just, all to me, all it takes is one or two more people saying, hey, Rhonda's not lying. Because it's not like a lot of what she's coming off complaining about is necessarily like her just lying about it. She's upset with the way, you know, WWE hid the culture of John Laurinaitis and Vince McMahon's, I'm not even going to call them allegations. We know these motherfuckers were doing this shit. And then she's upset that they're treating Logan Paul better than her. That's a whole other situation. You know, Logan Paul can actually, you know, draw fans. That's a whole different thing. And so it's not like she's lying about anything. I think this is dangerous, though. If we continue to give her an audience, she's going to end up like Ryback, where anytime Ryback gets on his podcast, he's bitching about WWE. And it almost comes off bitter because they won't bring him back. So we'll move to...
I do think that one reason why I do look at Ronda more of like, why don't you kind of come forward sooner or while you're with the company, is because... Right. Ronda, you know, we know she kicks ass. Like, she's like, you know, she'll speak what's on her mind. She does whatever she wants. Also, it's not like she's like a small indie wrestler who's trying to get their start in the company and doesn't want to ruffle any feathers. Like, she doesn't need WWE. She's got money with them or without them. Like, her life is made. Her career is made. She made a lot of money in UFC. She was acting in movies, endorsements, all this stuff.
Right.
Like, yeah, she was a big-time celebrity, big-time athlete who didn't need WWE. So it's not like, you know, I don't take her as the person to be like afraid of getting fired or afraid of ruffling feathers. It's like your life is made at this point. Like that's why, and you know, she's a badass and she spoke up about stuff. Even when she was with the UFC, she was against the whole, you know, against the whole way things are done or whatever. You know, she was afraid to speak her mind, especially when she was with the UFC. That's why it's like hard to hear all this stuff now afterwards, to a point where she sounds bitter.
Right. I can agree with that. So last night we crowned a new women's champion. And it is Becky Lynch. So what's your thoughts on her winning? And then we'll continue that conversation from there.
Hashtag anyone but Liv.
I can feel that.
Low key, but Becky took a page out of the John Moxley handbook. You know,
bro, I literally thought that when she won, I was like, oh, they caught her in.
Yeah, she was getting ready to take, you know, some months off, go hang with the family, and then you know, Ray gets hurt, just like what was it, MJF or who was it, Punk?
Yeah.
Who got hurt? It was MJF.
I would think it was Punk at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, Punk got hurt, so they called John Moxley back in, like when he was like ready to go on vacation. And yes, like the Raw women's roster was definitely lacking star power.
Yeah.
Especially when you're Becky about to go on vacation, Rhea gets hurt. Now you're looking at who you're entitled to.
Right.
Like, my next in line was Nia Jax, just because she's been pretty dominant. She's, you know,
so
she's strong, whatever.
My thing on Nia is I feel like and they even did it in the Battle Royal. Her and Piper Niven will never be champions because of the way WWE treats bigger women. Mm. They're treated the same way the taller giants are treated on the men's side of the roster. And so I don't personally believe Nia, especially that Nia Jax is in her 40s. I don't think they're going to put the company behind her. Mm. She's done the best work of her career over the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And I think she deserves some flowers there. But I'm fine with the Becky choice. I have two problems though, that are just two critiques that I would have done different. So the first thing to me, and I'm not the first one that came up with this. I found this someone that I follow on Twitter posted this as well, is less than a month ago, Becky Lynch just fought for this title and lost.
Yeah.
And so the question then becomes, why does she automatically get to win it? Now I get you can try to keep it in kayfabe and be like, oh, it's a battle royal, it's whoever the best that can, you know, eliminate the other people. My second critique is WWE, you did mention how weak the roster was. You had the perfect opportunity with Rhea out, with Becky on vacation. I would say third strongest would be Raquel. We don't know if we'll ever see her again. You had the perfect opportunity to put someone like Indy Hartwell, Zoe Starks, Chelsea Green in an opportunity to say, hey, we believe in you. Here's the title. This title's transitionary anyway. Prove to us why we should keep you champion.
And call up.
Right. And build that roster. This was the perfect opportunity to reset the women's division. It could have even been as easy as, let's bring Jade in this. I know she's on SmackDown, but the draft is next week. She can win the belt and be drafted to Raw.
And a big issue was that they rushed it. Like you could have treaded water for a week or two.
Yeah,
to get past the draft. You could have done
the winner of Queen of the Ring.
Yeah, Queen of the Ring. Yeah, like, just tread water for a month.
I thoroughly agree with you. There's no reason in the world why they needed to rush getting a new champion. I don't think we would have missed not having a champion. And so with that, it will give us one minute. All right. Yeah, so I agree with you. We could have waited. Queen of the Ring, crown a new champion. Winner of this tournament. Because what's Queen of the Ring really going to do? Like, I don't understand why we're doing this gimmick again. I don't. If it's just going to be like, hey, you get a crown and nothing comes from it, why are we doing King and Queen of the Ring again? I don't get it. But so now we got to address the Liv fans because they're annoying. Yeah, they're all upset right now. Liv Morgan needs to be champion to them. She's the greatest thing on the roster. What's your response to them?
The Liv crybabies. All right. From Cody crybabies to Liv crybabies. It's like, okay, so they're all saying Liv deserves it. Liv deserves it. I'm like, what has she done to deserve it lately?
Right.
You know, I know we're holding like that bad title reign from like, what, a year or two ago against her, but it's like you returned at Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm. And you haven't done anything.
And like, even when you returned, your reaction was mixed.
Right.
Because she came out at 30, people didn't really want to see her at 30.
Right.
Since then, she's at what, 4 matches since then? Lost like 2 of them. And it's like,
yeah.
She's getting a very mixed reaction.
Right. And so here's my thing. My problem is that fans of certain wrestlers can't see the long-term story at play. If y'all could just be patient, and this is my thing, I said it with Cody, with the Cody crybabies. Y'all wanted him at WrestleMania 39, and you cried for an entire year. We want Cody this. Cody should have finished the story. And then we get what we got now. And if you would have just been patient, you had great programming in the last year to make it an even better situation for Cody to be in.
Yeah.
Same thing is here. Becky Lynch is a transitionary champion. This gets them through the summer. I think personally for me, it's Liv and Becky for the summer. That's the feud. And I think Liv ends up winning the championship eventually sometime this summer, which then sets onto the stage the Rhea Ripley return. We get Rhea versus Liv, maybe SummerSlam. I don't know how long Rhea is going to be out for. I don't assume it's going to be that long. Liv had the same injury and was only gone for like 2 months. So I assume by the time we get to like a Money in the Bank or a SummerSlam, Rhea and Liv will be the match at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
For the title, whether or not Liv beats Rhea or whatnot. And I know the number one critique against that is that it's probably going to be like Liv Morgan doing side quests with Dom and breaking up all the stuff that Rhea had. You could still do that at the same time of her facing Becky Lynch. Like, You can do more than one story at a time with characters and create that character depth. So unless something drastically changes with the women's roster in the next week with the draft, I don't necessarily see anything but Liv versus Becky for that title.
Yeah, like we said, the main issue, WWE booked himself into a corner by rushing and not treading water for a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. All you do is wait for the draft, you know, equalize your rosters a little bit, you know.
Right.
You know, balance it out. And then you could have, you know, kind of made something. Now, right. You know, you rush Becky back. You're like, hey, take the title for, a few, you know, a couple months or whatever. You know, it was just a really bad rush decision.
And I like, agree.
I don't know. Liv's just not getting – Liv's not fully over right now. I don't know if it's the Liv fans or Liv's just a little cringe.
I forgot the statistic, but I think it's somewhere around the realm of like only 20% of America is on Twitter. Yeah. And so we should never take the opinions of the online fan base for like we should take it with the largest grain of salt ever. It's not representative of the entire fan base. And so I feel like the only place Liv is over is online. But that's a minority of the fan base. And so I think Triple H, praise God, Triple H listens. I think he understands people don't want Liv as champion. I think he could have been, like you said, a little bit more patient, wait a month, get new rosters, go to Saudi Arabia, crown yourself a new champion there. Imagine the PR around WWE crowning the first ever champion in Saudi Arabia. Like how much you could push the idea of diversity and inclusion in WWE by doing that. I'm assuming up until Saudi Arabia, we're going to have the King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring, like either qualifying matches or the tournament's going to be the entire month of March or of May leading up to the finals being at the pay-per-view or PLE. I just got to say to the Liv super fans out there, I feel you. I understand it. It's just not her time yet. Little bit of patience. I think she's not bad. Like, I'm not sitting here and going to be like, oh, she's her scream's annoying. She needs to stop screaming. Just stop. I don't get the gimmick. What are we getting revenge for? And so I think there needs to be some depth in that character, which I'm certain Triple H will build. But I don't know. It's not her time yet. Just give it some time.
Were you a huge fan of Raw last night? I thought Raw was slightly above mid last night.
So, I will be honest. I wasn't really paying all that much attention. It's playoff hockey time. The Bruins were on TV. we lost, so I was a little bit upset when the game was over. The only thing I cared about was this match to see who would be champion. I watched part of it. This has been my thing, and this is why. Like, I'm happy Triple H is in charge. I think he understands storytelling, but he's turning Raw, just like I said he would, into NXT Black and Gold. And a lot of times, at least for me, that was very average week to week television. But we're gonna get to these PLEs. It's gonna be the best show ever.
Yeah,
because Triple H understands how to make moments at these PLEs. It's just I feel like a lot of people who are like on the WWE side are going to try to hype it up. It was a mid episode. It was pretty average.
Yeah, it was better than Vince, but as far as Triple H booking,
right?
It wasn't his best work last night.
I feel like. Because the push towards WrestleMania was so heavily focused on Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, and now Roman's gone and The Rock is gone, and Cody wasn't there because he was a
SmackDown guy.
Right, he's going to be that SmackDown guy now. This is no diss to Damian. He can't carry the show by himself. Rhea's out of there. Seth is gone. CM Punk is gone. Drew's whole thing was with Sheamus this week.
Yeah.
And so you're missing a lot of your top stars that you've built the last 6 months over and it shows.
And like, there's definitely a few. I mean, this was just personal taste. There was wrestlers who were on the show who I'm just not super fond of, who I find a little boring. Like Shinsuke, I'm not a huge fan of. So when he has like a long match against Sheamus, who, you know, Sheamus is a great wrestler. He's not the most exciting. But, right, like, that match, I was literally on my phone playing, like, Clash of Clans, right, and stuff. And
I'm the same way when I was joking around the last time that I was watching and he was on Sami Zayn. I call him Snorri Zayn. He literally put me to sleep.
Yes.
There are some of these more IWC fan favorites that I just don't connect to. Shinsuke, same thing. I don't get it.
I'm usually a big fan of Imperium, but their match with New Day last night, I don't know if I was just exhausted from work or whatever.
Right.
I was dozing off during the New Day and Imperium match. you know, the post-match angle definitely saved it for me and woke me up.
Right.
But the match itself just felt like too routine, and we've seen New Day Imperium feuding for like the last like half a year.
So my thing with New Day, and I'm glad people are finally picking up with this, is this gimmick has been the same thing for 10 straight years.
Yes.
I'm tired of it. I don't know how much longer I can take the sort of like, we need a heel New Day.
And we need a New Day feud. We need a Kofi versus Xavier Woods feud.
Yeah. Especially if like Big E's not coming back, which I don't think he is. Like, I felt like the perfect thing would have been for them to start having like Big E sort of was like the leader, and then they start to turn on each other because Big E's not there to keep the peace. And especially when like Kofi got his chance and Xavier hasn't, you could have used that as an angle. I just
still can.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's all just the same recycled bit with him, and it's, you know, 10 years of it.
I'm telling you.
It's a little bit pat, and I think especially since a lot of the programming is moving past the sort of super childish gimmicks.
Yeah.
And then it's that they're just there and it makes them stand out, and but it's not in a good way.
The problem is that New Day Imperium got stale, but at this point I would love to see a Kofi versus Xavier Woods feud, you know, over, you know, a little bit of jealousy or whatever, and then you make Big E pick a side. You know, so he gets stuck in the middle.
Here's the thing.
He gets him on TV to do a little bit of stuff.
Or he could even be like special guest referee.
That's what I'm saying. Yo, put me in creative, bro.
But now that you mentioned Imperium, and we do have this turn that I thought we would have gotten several months ago. It was well worth its time. Let me tell y'all something. This man, Giovanni Vinci, is about to put on bangers.
Yes.
By himself. They're about to give him a solo run. Everyone's like, well, it didn't work last time. Trust me, it's going to work this time.
You're looking at a future North American champion right there.
Yeah. He'll probably get drafted to NXT. That's the one thing I'm happy with. People can get drafted to NXT this year.
Low-key, I think you put Giovanni in NXT, Kaiser in SmackDown, leave Gunther on Raw. Yeah. And then you let all of them shine.
Yeah. You know, because everyone's talking about who's going to replace. And this is the thing that I hate about some wrestling fans is they automatically assume when someone gets subtracted, someone has to automatically fill in that void. Mm. And everyone automatically assumes it's going to be Dragunov. It's not going to be Dragunov.
First of all, Dragunov's too big to be a lackey.
Right. He's too big to be behind Gunther. If anything, Gunther and Dragunov will be arch enemies.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I started to feel like Gunther started maybe turn face. Because I think the feud's going to be Gunther versus Kaiser. I've felt that for a while.
Let me cook. what if we get Gunther on one side of the King of the Ring bracket, and Giovanni on the other side of the King of the Ring bracket, and then they meet each other at Crown Jewel for the King of the Ring championship?
Tell you something, it writes itself. I'm not a big fan of Gunther wasting the next 3 months in the King of the Ring, though. I get it. It gets him time to like build himself, but I think he needs to be like the forefront of the show.
Well, it gives Damian time to actually hold the title and not seem too transitional. Like, give him like two title wins at PLEs. Like, give him Backlash, give him Saudi, give him two championship wins, so he doesn't look like a slump or a chump. And then you let someone take it at like Money in the Bank or whatever.
I feel you. Did anyone know where the fuck Finn Balor was?
That is a great question. I have no idea.
No, they didn't. Because did they address it on Raw?
Not that I can recall. Maybe I missed it on commentary or something, but I just I don't recall.
And then Dom Dom's hurt, legit hurt, and that's kind of sad. But I think they played it well into the story. But we can all assume Judgment Day is about to. Yeah, they're about to fall apart. So we'll move into, before we get into the questions, the title of this is Cody Rhodes' title reign compromised? And I have a theory. Cody Rhodes did not get placed in the greatest of situations. And here's my theory. Because of how good Roman Reigns' reign was, and we've all been saying it for the past like 2 years, when Roman left, fans are going to immediately want him back. Mm. And it's happening. We want Roman chants are happening. Cody's not the main event anymore. It's still Solo and Tama, Tonga, Bloodline still running SmackDown. I just feel like they put Cody in a situation where he's almost doomed to not reach what everyone is expecting this title reign to be. Mm. How do you follow up a 1,300-day title reign? Like, do you think he's been compromised? Do you think it's almost like he was set up to fail?
I think the Cody thing was more of a moment, mm-hmm. and then wishful thinking that he can carry on afterwards. Okay. I think the moment was the biggest thing, like, you know, the big WrestleMania moment.
Right.
And, you know, he is the top babyface of the company.
Right.
Now, I think we'll have a better idea after his first, like, defending feud. I don't think you throw Solo right in the mix right away with the Bloodline. I think you kind of keep Solo and the Bloodline occupied away for a while.
I don't think they go after Cody. I think they're done with the title. Okay. I think this is all just Bloodline versus Bloodline now.
Well, yeah, but with Roman and all them, you know, like on the side burner for now. I'm assuming after the draft, Cody goes to SmackDown, or do you send Damian to SmackDown?
That's the question. Like, what are we doing?
Because I think a good post or a good next feud for Cody would be Randy Orton. And yep. It's like all about, like, you got here. And I kind of taught you everything, you know, everything, you know, kind of, you know, I was your mentor when you came in.
I created you. I can destroy you as well.
Exactly, kind of thing. And you kind of make that his next feud. His first defense is against AJ Styles at Backlash.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe touch on some Bullet Club history for the IWC, and, you know, you introduce the casuals to the Bullet Club a little bit more. Maybe some, like, oh, you know, Gallows and Anderson, maybe they somehow get kind of back involved because AJ and them have been feuding a little
bit. Theoretically, you know, if Judgment Day splits up, Finn Balor can get involved.
Yeah.
Technically, that you can sort of throw in Tama Tonga because he was part of Bullet Club.
Yeah. So we'll definitely over this next month is going to be a big challenge for Triple H, and it'll be very telling to see what he can do. I think it helps that he has Paul Heyman, who is essentially in charge of the Bloodline story as far as creative wise. So he can, like, kind of, you know, let Paul run that, you know, him and Michael Hayes, and they, you know, they get that cooking and do their own thing.
Just keep Jason Jordan away from it.
Yeah, keep Jason Jordan away from away from Cody, away from the Bloodline, going forward. But yeah, I think you do Cody AJ, Cody Randy, Cody LA Knight. You know, I'm not against face versus face.
Right. Like, I agree. So I know a lot of more casual fans don't like the idea of face versus face or heel versus heel. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think what's more important to me is what is your motivation.
Yeah.
And so, obviously with Cody being champion, it's, I want to keep my title. That's easy to tell. And then if there's someone like, an LA Knight who just feels like he's not being treated correctly, that's a fair motivation to build a story around. I think we can do these nuanced stories, and I don't want, I think a lot of times what casual fans do without knowing they're doing it is they treat the fan base like they're dumb. Fans recognize and can understand nuance. We see it on TV all the time where we see two good guys go, you know, have entire like episodes where they're battling each other for who's just, you know, we see it in UFC all the time. It's two guys that fans like that just get put in the ring together. Yeah. And it's who's just the best. Sometimes having those type of matches, similar to what we saw on AEW with Bryan Danielson and Ospreay, who's the best? Now, I wish they would have, and I'm actually going to talk about that. That's Friday's episode. It's just reviewing Dynasty, because I did watch it. And so I'll save my comments for that match for Friday. But I don't think that I think casuals are too quick to judge what hardcore fans like, but some of the shit they like is actually really good. And I would, you know, a face versus face, or, you know, Damian Priest as a heel fighting someone like Gunther as a heel, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. To me, people try to make it too simple, and a little bit of nuance in the storylines makes it compelling.
It's like, we shouldn't go from LA Knight the past 5 months having, like, he wants the championship, wants to fight for it. And then, Cody won it. Yeah, I don't really want the championship anymore.
Right.
It's like, yeah, that man wants the championship. He's going to fight whoever's there to get it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Absolutely. All right. So we'll move forward to these Discord questions. Again, link for the Discord is in the description. So Kara asked two questions for us. Welcome back. I'll start with this one. We've already touched on Nick Nemeth, but she asked, do you think Nick Nemeth will be a top guy long term in TNA?
Where's her thing? Oh, sorry. Her question was, do you think Nick Nemeth will be a top guy in TNA?
Yeah, long term.
Long term? Top guy as in competing for the world title, or just being on TV every week with like a credible opponent?
I would assume she means, and this is the definition I've made my answer off of, like the guy in TNA.
No.
Okay. Yeah, because I have the same answer.
You got Moose, who's had that title for I don't know how long. How long has Moose been their champion? He's been there for a minute.
I feel like it's been a minute.
Yeah. And then his next feud looks like it's going to be against Matt Hardy, who just returned to TNA. So Matt Hardy jumped the line, and Nick is going to be involved in other stuff. And you got upcoming talents like, say his name, man. He appeared, who's getting over, even with a WWE fan base. Shout out Joe Henry.
Not me.
You're not a Joe Henry guy?
Nah, he can go back to England and stay there.
I'm not as familiar with TNA's game, but you know they got some big dogs over there. Like what's his name? Josh Alexander is a big time wrestler. Yeah, you got Moose. You got Matt Hardy, who's gonna jump the line. You got AJ Francis, who's gonna try to make a name for himself. I think AJ might get in the title picture. I don't think he's gonna be there for long, but I think AJ Francis will get into the title picture. You got people like Eric Young, who might try to get one more, crack at before he retires. And, you know, I just think Nick is going to be a big name that's going to be around, but I don't see him as the guy in TNA. Right.
So, I don't see him being the guy because I don't think he wants to put in that type of schedule. I think for him, and I'm pretty sure he stated something along the lines of, I think he's going to enjoy the indie scene too much to dedicate the time to stay on TNA. where he can. I think what he wants is just the freedom, like coming out of WWE, where you're sort of like, you have to do the show. If you're scheduled for TV, you have to be there. There's no if, ands, what's about it. For him to finally be in control of his schedule, just coming to do some dates. He'll actually be in North Carolina this Sunday. I might go and see him. Who knows? But for him to just be able to control his schedule, pick the dates he wants to work, still do his comedy stuff. I think he still does them. And so I don't think he wants to put in the type of schedule that being the guy where he has to be on TV every week.
I even think on TNA's part, I think they're past the days, they're past the times where they're just gonna throw their world title on the new WWE release.
Right. Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think it would be dumb to take it off of Moose. Moose is probably the top guy they got right now.
Yeah. They're gonna put it on homegrown guys or
yeah,
you know, guys who are making their name. Like, they're past the days of putting it on Ken Kenny just because he's the new guy in town from WWE.
Right, right.
You know, say they're past those days.
Absolutely. She asked a second question. Why is AEW still taking shots at WWE? The example she uses is after Dynasty, Tony Storm takes a shot at Cody. I think Ospreay took that shot at Triple H, or basically said that he's the best wrestler in the world. Why would I fuck with people below me? What's your thoughts on all of this?
I'm definitely very split, because half of me loves. I enjoy the jabs at each other, but then the other part of me is like, but like, you gotta be good to be jabbing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just seems just like distasteful when you're like not on the level of the person you're jabbing at, and it almost seems like clout chasing.
Right.
It's like if I'm just like a like local Connecticut rapper and I'm just like making diss tracks at Drake every other week because like I'm trying to like build my clout off the back of him, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Whereas like I can get into a rap beef with James, with Junkyard James, because we're both on level playing field.
Right.
So like me and him jabbing at each other is different than me jabbing up at Ariel Helwani, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, and like Tony, her comment, like, you know, it was all in character, whatever. I don't really care. And I know that she's probably still salty about her time at WWE, and like her shot at Cody, I think was more distasteful just because Cody himself has never badmouthed AEW. He speaks very highly of AEW.
Right.
And without him, there would be no AEW. And as far as Will Ospreay, his comment was just entirely false. Because, like, he was saying that going forward, like, I'm not going to punch at people below me or whatever, or people lesser than me. Whereas, like, bro, you're lucky if you can, like, right, shine Triple H's belt.
Right. So, I wish both sides would just stop jabbing at each other. I really do. I think it's high school drama we don't need. Just run your company and focus on, especially when it comes for like AEW, you've been jabbing for 5 years and it hasn't really changed much of anything. In fact, I think it's cost you fans. Now about these two individual comments, let's talk about Tony Storm first, because it's the easiest. Just like you said, Cody's never talked shit about the company. But my biggest thing is she's like, if you want something about cinema, go watch a fucking movie. Tony Storm, your entire fucking character is a cinema character. Like, it's about the storytelling. Like, and so when everyone's like, oh, well, she was acting in character. No, she wasn't in character. She actually broke character, because if she was in character, she wouldn't have basically jabbed on cinematic characters. Or cinematic storytelling, because that's what her character is. And so I just, if you're going to jab, you gotta be, logical with your jabs. The same thing with like Ospreay. You could be the best wrestler in the world. I've sat here and said he's the best wrestler in the world. Because he is. But there's a difference between being the best wrestler in the world and being the best pro wrestler in the world. The best all-around entertainer in the business. There's a difference there. For example, I think Ricochet might be the best technical in-the-ring X's and O guy in WWE. Or at least one of them. Gable's up there with them, but they're not the top guy. Mm. Triple H may not be able to run circles around Ospreay in his prime, in the ring, but the character, the reign of terror from Triple H, some of the best TV. I know a lot of people hate it, but to me, some of the best TV work I've ever seen with him putting over Orton and Batista, getting Ric Flair involved. It was Evolution was great. What has Will Ospreay done? He's had a match with Bryan Danielson. Like what have you done to outside of in the ring? What story have you told me that will make me remember you? Again, this is coming from someone who believes you're the best X and O guy, but the best quarterback in the league and the NFL might not be who the superstar is. I don't believe Tom Brady is, you know, on paper X's and O's the best quarterback. I just don't. But when it comes to clutch situations in Super Bowls, Tom Brady could show up. I think Peyton Manning was a better quarterback from an X and O standpoint at reading defenses and throwing the deep ball. Peyton Manning was levels above Tom Brady. But Brady has more championships. Brady's more known. And so, I don't know. Why are you jabbing at Triple H for?
Look at it this way. Will Ospreay is the Lamar Jackson to Triple H's Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm all about the jabbing. Keep it jabbing. I appreciate it more when it's not on TV time. If y'all want to take shots on interviews,
and that's my thing.
Or Twitter, I'm all about it.
Yeah, because James brings that up. Like, they've been jabbing. Yeah, but they've jabbed on fucking podcast. Yeah, Jade was on a podcast where she was asked a question. Triple H was asked a question on a podcast. When he mentioned, and he didn't even name Will Ospreay.
Yeah.
He just made a general.
If the shoe fits, the shoe fits.
Right. CM Punk was on a podcast where I'm sure he didn't know what was going to be asked of him. And so, like, yeah, were jabs thrown? Yeah, but it wasn't on any WWE scheduled programming. And so I think there's a difference. If you do it off of TV, off of, you know, if Cody Rowe, I mean, Cody's not going to do it, but if Drew McIntyre wants to go on the Today Show and they ask him about CM Punk, one, I expect him to be in character, but two, if he wants to go off on CM Punk and start throwing jabs, or if they ask him about, you know, anyone in AEW, yeah, sure, trash him, that's fine. It's different when you have Adam Copeland come out to start your show and start throwing jabs on your TV time. And then the final thing, before we do our typical Thirsty Tuesday, Witters put in sort of a fantasy draft type thing. And then so Wavy D upped it from 5 picks to 10 picks. And so we're going to compromise. We're going to do 10 picks. Witters had a whole bunch of criteria in it. And to compromise, it's just we're going to do 10 picks. Wavy D is going to represent Raw. He's going to be Adam Pearce for the night. I'm going to be Nick Otis. The only rules are in these 10 picks, you must have at least 3 women and at least 2 tag teams. So that's basically 5 of your picks there. Outside of that, you can do whatever you want.
No, question. Are we drafting without championships?
Correct. Yep, you read my mind. the assumption is no one's a champion. All the titles are vacated. We can reassess champions after the draft, basically. Because if I was WWE, that's what I would do. And that's why I would make the draft like a pre-Royal Rumble thing to where like we can start the – and again, this is a whole different – I believe WWE should go from January to November and then – December should just be like all of Raw and SmackDown should just be like the best of 2024 in December because it's the holidays. Give your people the time off. It gives Triple H a time to write heading into Royal Rumble. And day one, that PLE could basically just be your draft. And that way you could sort of reset. And I think it would be interesting if you sort of vacated all the titles at the end of the year and created new stories that way.
Problem with that though is then you're gonna mess with the record books a little bit. You're gonna make some of these records unattainable. Let's make champions safe.
I mean, you could do something like that where maybe like the champion, if you're a champion, you earn the right to stay on the brand or whatever. I don't know.
Elect to either, you know, stay right. champion like, or you like can elect deeper, to vacate.
Yeah, something like that. But with that, off camera, we flip the coin. Wavy D saw that he gets to go first. So Raw is official. So the way we're going to do this, we're not going to do it like the normal draft where like Raw gets three picks and all of that. No, it's one pick at a time. And it's just going to go Wavy D, then me, then back and forth. All right, so who's your first pick?
Now, question, are we only doing superstars who currently have a WWE contract? Or are we doing, like, TV limits?
Yes. Just so current contract. NXT's fine.
Well, but now, are there any TV rules? Like, they have been TV a certain time ago?
No. Anyone that has a contract in WWE, you can draft.
Okay. I am drafting with the number one pick in the Slappy Meat Wrestling draft, I'm taking Bianca Belair.
Interesting. That's not where I thought you were going.
And after the draft, I'll give you my reasoning for my picks after the draft.
All right. So you and me sort of had the same mindset of woman with the first pick. I'm going Rhea Ripley.
Okay.
Yeah, and we'll wait to after to discuss our picks. So who's your next pick?
All right. My next pick in the draft. See, I want certain people, but then I have to remember draft for position value. Right? What's that called?
Right.
I could take so-and-so, but I could probably get them later in the draft.
Right.
I'm taking the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes.
That's what I thought you were going to go with the first pick. But so this might be a surprise with some of y'all. But my number two pick is going to be Solo Sikoa.
Okay.
All right.
My number three pick in the draft. Oh crap! If it was a regular work day where I got to work at like 2:30,
right?
And I got home at 3:00. I was chilling.
Right.
I had to go do my other job from like 5:00 to practically 9:00. So right. All this time I would have spent making a draft board.
Right.
Oh crap. So Bianca, Cody. And then give me Bronson Reed.
Bronson Reed. Okay. I like that pick. My third pick. We're going to NXT for this one. And it's Trick Williams.
Okay.
Now, some may say that's too early, but we'll see. We'll see. What's your fourth pick?
All right. You might need to call flag on the play, depending how you take it. Because they are newly just a tag team. Okay. I'm taking the rest of Imperium.
Okay, so
is Gunther and Kaiser as a tag team? Is that allowable? Or are you gonna call a flag? I'll let you call a flag on the play.
Okay, so I'll say it this way. I'll count it because technically they are a tag team, but to erase, you know, confusion, if you wanted to take like Legado del Fantasma, mm-hmm. and you wanted to take like the whole faction, I think that counts.
Okay, I'm redoing my pick then.
Okay,
I'm taking just Gunther.
Just Gunther.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a fair pick. My fourth pick, I am going to go tag team. And I'm going to go with A-Town Down Under.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, your fifth pick.
I'm going to tag team too. Give me the Wolf Dogs.
Ooh.
That's a sneaky pick right there.
That's a sneaky good pick. Okay. So my fifth pick is going to be Becky Lynch.
That's fine. You got Becky.
Yeah, see, and I knew. See, I was trying to strategize when I should take her because I knew you didn't want her. So technically, I probably could have taken her 10th. But all right, who's your sixth pick?
I think I have one person in mind, but I think I can take them. I could probably sneak them with my 10th pick. Giving you a little hint, I think I can sneak them with my 10th pick. I'm taking their tag team. I'm taking the Creed Brothers.
Damn. That's the first person that I wanted that you took. But that's a good pick. All right. So we'll have to readjust to that in a minute. My sixth pick, I'm going back down to NXT. And I'm taking Oba Femi.
Solid.
All right, your seventh pick.
Give me Brock Lesnar.
Damn. I didn't even think of him at all. God.
But that's what I was asking about, the contract thing.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair pick. All right, so this is on my little pre-draft board. This is where I would have taken the Creeds at seven, but you just took them. So I need another tag team. We can save that in a minute. We'll just go with Logan Paul.
Ooh, very solid. Very solid.
Am I
eight or nine?
Pick eight.
Okay, I think this person could still wait a little bit. I doubt they're even on your mind. So who I got? I got Bianca, Cody, Bronson Reed, Gunther, Wolf Dogs,
Creed,
Brock Lesnar. Uh-huh. So I got my two tag teams. I have one woman so far.
Yep.
And I'm pick seven.
So you're on pick eight. You're on pick eight right now. So you just need. So
I need two women, and then I have a free pick.
Yep.
All right. Well, so to keep you guessing, I'll take one of my women now, so I keep you guessing later. Give me the way.
The way, like the whole faction.
Yeah, the whole faction of the way.
Okay.
Now, does that encompass Tommaso Ciampa as well? Or is that just Johnny, Candace, and Indy, and Dexter? Or no, Dexter's in the way, right? Dexter Lumis?
Yeah. I'll include Tommaso because...
I don't get theory.
Huh?
Because I don't get theory.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
You got eight times out there?
Yeah. Okay. That's going to make this graphic super large because I was going to I was gonna have like a team wavy D. Okay. Am I going to count that for your women? I think that's fair. Or
yeah, I mean, I'll sell for just Candace and Indy.
Okay, because that's typically how the way is listed as Candace and Indy.
Yeah, you can leave Johnny off the thing. You just give me Candace and Indy.
Okay, that's fair. My pick eight. Ilya Dragunov.
All right.
Your pick nine. Alrighty. So you'll need one more woman and a free pick. And then I need a tag team and a woman.
All right. Give me my other woman.
Okay.
So here's the pick that I've been plotting on for this whole draft that's going to be my sleeper pick.
Oh, boy.
Give me Sol Ruka.
God damn it. Fuck.
Was she your 10th-er?
She was gonna be my number 10. That's a good pick. That's a good pick. Oh, yo,
I was
man.
Watching tonight. She was like in a spring break street fight or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, she got the athleticism, she got the look.
She's
and now she got the street fight ability, like a little bit of a hardcore side to her.
Yeah.
I'm taking Sol Ruka.
You're lucky.
I saw that street fight on TV.
All right. So I need a woman and a tag team. Let's go with the tag team first. Fuck. Trying to think of who I want. Okay, we'll go with the Street Profits.
Okay. I mean, do you want all of Pride?
No, Bobby. We don't need Bobby.
All right, with my last pick, right? Is my 10th pick?
Yep.
All right. You know what time it is? It's Tiffy time. Give me Tiffany Stratton with my 10th pick.
Okay. I like that. Okay. And with my 10th pick, the final pick. Shit, man. It needs to be a woman. So I'm going to do and have it be. Fuck, why not? Charlotte Flair.
She was on my board, but I was thinking Bianca. I'm like, I've already seen Bianca and Charlotte a couple times.
Right. So my strategy was just like young, up and coming talent. Like I didn't really want to focus on like Roman or Rock or any of that. Oh fuck, dude! I could have fucking drafted the Usos. Oh well, we'll keep the Street Profits. but. Yeah, I think that ended pretty well. Went a lot better than I thought it would. Damn, I can't believe he took Sol Ruka. Damn it. I thought I was going to sneak that one in at 10.
You want to explain any of your picks?
Huh?
You want to talk about any of your picks?
I wanted to get like a mix of like established stars, like Rhea. Like you don't want to just leave Rhea there for the taking. But then at the same time, like, I mean, if you really look at it, like my three women, because I feel like the women's division is important to build around because, so I have Rhea, I have Becky and I have Charlotte, probably the top three in the roster right now. And then I have, in the tag division, I have the Street Profits. I have Waller and Theory. You can build around those two teams. And then I got Dragunov and Trick, which we already know they can run a main card feud. And then Solo's up there. And then we sort of put in the middle of the card, Oba Femi and Logan Paul battle for that U.S. championship.
Yeah.
I think it's just an overall, it's young. You know, I think a lot of WWE's problem at times is the age of their talent that they're pushing. Like, LA Knight's great, but I wouldn't build a company around them at 40 something years old.
Mm.
Same thing with like CM Punk. Like, he wasn't even a thought to me because of his age.
Yeah. He passed one over a split second.
Right. Oh, but I look at your roster and I mean, you practically got the two biggest baby faces in Cody and Bianca.
Yeah. So,
you know, as Raw, and that's going to probably be the show that, at least for now, is the kid-friendly show. You got the kids watching Raw. Wolf Dogs is a sneaky pick because Braun Breaker, you can eventually have a feud where that team splits. You got the Creeds back there. I think the only pick that I wouldn't have done was Brock, but I get why you want Brock Lesnar there because he sells fucking he puts asses in seats.
Exactly.
So I get it.
I'm thinking, you say we got Bianca Cody, biggest baby faces in the world.
Right.
You got Bronson Reed. I'm gonna try to push him. Well, I'm putting him in a match with Gunther.
Right.
And then I'm getting Gunther versus Brock Lesnar, which we should have got at Mania.
Right.
Bronson Reed and Cody. I'm putting Wolf Dogs against the Creed Brothers, a tag team, like best out of five series. Like we're gonna break the house down with those guys.
Right.
I got Indy and Candace. I got this team mostly for Indy Hartwell.
Right.
I think she's a player. And, you know, Sol Ruka, she got star written on her, I think, future star. So I got Sol Ruka, who's so athletic, to go against Bianca, who's an athletic, strong freak. Tiffany Stratton, who's like the white Bianca Belair. You know what I'm saying? As far as like physical, like muscular strength, while also being highly athletic and highly agile. They're literally like yin and yang. Like the black version, the white version. They're like the perfect mold of a woman superstar, the two of them. Yeah, so I got pairings. I feel like I have a decent mixture of babyface and heel. And then I think Bianca and Cody, if you explore some of their heel tendencies or their darker story, I feel like those guys could be very intriguing.
Right. All right. So let's end this the way we always do. Thirsty Tuesday. We in the middle of this tournament. I'll announce the winners from last week are Indy Hartwell, Roxanne Perez, Bailey, and Bianca Belair. So they're moving on this week. Now, I forgot to send them to Wavy D, so he's probably going to have to look up some of these names. So our first matchup is Cora Jade versus Fallon Henley.
Cora Jade. I'm familiar with both the game. I know Fallon, you know, she got the little country girl swag to her, little, you know, she pretty. But I got to go Cora Jade, bro.
So as much as I love Fallon, I agree. It's got to be Cora. Like, if this is, you know, who am I the most thirstiest for? Like, you take, I mean, we're not balancing off of gimmick work or anything.
Yeah.
It's Cora. Like, she has the look. So it's Cora Jade. The second matchup is Kiana James from NXT and Alexa Bliss.
Kiana James is the light skinned baby face, right? She's a little bit newer.
No, she's the
which one am I thinking of?
Let me see if you can see this.
Oh, okay. She's involved with Thea Hale for a little bit, right? Is that the one?
Yeah. She's the one. Trying to think of how to describe her. She's sort of like she had a thing with like Fallon Henley last year, but I don't know if you were watching NXT last year.
Yeah. She also like, she's like a slight teacher almost, right?
Yeah.
It's like teacher gimmick almost, or dresses like that almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. She got a weird build because she got some muscle to her. She got right. She got like that six pack thing going on, but like,
right.
She looked a little like, she looks old in the forehead. I don't know.
This boy, like, this dude, man, looking at foreheads.
Like, she, I don't know. She, like, certain pictures, she doesn't look very muscular, and in certain pictures, right. She looks hella muscular. And I don't know. I think it's just the head shape almost. It's just like very oval, but then she got like a big forehead too. But like, and like, I usually like big foreheads. I usually think big foreheads are kind of cute.
Right.
But I'm not, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of her in particular. Okay. I'll take Alexa Bliss.
I'm going Kiana James.
Yeah, I'd be analyzing this for the folks, for the listeners. If you don't know what she looked like, I'm trying to give you a visual representation.
He's breaking it down for you. Our next matchup is Rhea Ripley versus, and you're probably going to have to look this one up, Ariana Grace.
I think I said Ariana Grande.
She's Ariana Grace, for those who don't know, that's Santino's daughter.
I remember her not being that good looking. Let me see.
Oh, no. So while you're looking it up, I'm taking Ariana Grace because she is.
Oh. She's annoying. She be annoying me. when I saw her on the, she looked on the kickoff show for Stay and Deliver.
Yeah.
She's so annoying. Her gimmick, Miss NXT. I mean, she pretty and all, but like, she ain't no Santina. You know what I'm saying?
So you taking Rhea over her? You taking mommy?
I think it's just the aura of Rhea Ripley that I like a lot. It's the aura. It's the personality. Ooh, I mean. Okay, I'm not going with you. Ariana Grace ain't that bad though. She's cute. But I picture like if I'm like with her, all I picture is like Santino.
Okay.
Just knowing that, so I'm going Rhea.
Rhea. Okay, I'm taking Ariana Grace. Now I'm guaranteeing you're gonna need to look this one up because she's brand new to NXT. Her name's Jasmine Nix. And that Nix is NYX for those who don't know. Her opponent is Becky Lynch.
Yeah, I gotta go with Jasmine Nix right here.
Yeah, that's fucking obvious. That's the most obvious of the four.
Yo, Shawn Michaels be recruiting, boy. he got a tight. Shawn Michaels got it.
Right.
I'm trying to see what Shawn Michaels be doing in these interview rooms.
Right.
We're about to get dark side of the room, the Shawn Michaels recruitment.
Right. All right. So that's another episode here of the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast. Thank y'all for listening. Hope y'all enjoyed it. Go check out the Discord. Y'all can vote on these mock draft. Fantasy draft results and these blind rankings. I'll have all that up as soon as possible. But until then, I'll see you guys on the next one.
Yes, sir. Brother, I'm going on a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars. No horse, boy.